Not at all, James. Thank you very much indeed. I'm delighted to be here. Thanks. Well, I should say, it's an imposing title, which we sorted out by email. There aren't easy answers to this one, and I certainly don't have easy answers to it. And full disclosure at the beginning, the magazine that I edit and run is not yet making a profit, but it has moved from a position of financial crisis to one where we expect it to make a profit soon. And that's obviously partly what I'm going to talk about today. But let me just say at the beginning that the kind of things I'm going to talk about really come down to three things. One is getting the identity of magazine, publication, website, whatever, just very clear. Why are you doing it? Why are you getting up in the morning to do it? Why are readers going to read it? And one of the things I've tried to do at Prospect is get the editors who work with me to reach for the voice of the writers, because that begins to give you something that is compelling in identity. And a separate talk I could give you is on what we call paragraph three in-house, of the paragraph that tells you why you are reading this. And in this kind of journalism that I'm going to go on and talk about, the question of what is the question that this piece is setting out to answer, what is the question this writer wants to answer, is absolutely central. From that, you get your headline, your sense of urgency, you get your argument, you get your conclusion. Without that, you can't retrofit those things. And so we're setting out to strengthen the identity of this magazine. And that really, I'll talk a lot about Prospect, that really applies to all kinds of publication. The next thing is about using digital media to reach new people and retain them. And that's become absolutely central to what we're doing. And the third thing, which applies to the model that is behind Prospect, which is a subscription model, and to quite a lot of others, is how to capture, if you like, corporate money, either traditionally through print advertising or for digital advertising or from sponsorship and sponsored content. And I'm going to talk quite a bit about that, because that's become, in a way, the new advertising, and it's a tricky thing to deal with. And I'm going to talk about that. And I'm going to refer at the end to other models. People have done it really very different ways. There is not one answer to this question. But the good news for all of us in this is that there are becoming answers to this. If we were having this conversation 5 years ago, I think we'd be having a much muddier, more depressed sort of conversation. I'd refer you to a big report by PwC, the consultants, which is all over the papers this morning, but mainly in the business sections, on the state of all kinds of industries, but including state of the media industry, and state of bits of the media industry within that, including music, book publishing, but also the different kinds of written media. And the prognosis is much, much better. The outlook is much better than some years ago. It's clear that people are finding answers to how to run organizations profitably, with a clear identity, with a sense that something they want to be doing, in a way that they weren't so much 5 years ago. Though we're only partly way through this transformation that is a decades-long transformation that is hitting the industry. Let me just say, before I start to talk about Prospect, I actually began, even before this long life that James has read out, I began as an investment analyst in the city, looking at media companies, something that has come in remarkably useful in running Prospect, and indeed in raising money for Prospect. And I struck that there was never really a golden age of profit for many organizations. It's remarkable how little money newspapers in particular have made over the years. And I'm thinking particularly of Britain, where it's been a very, very competitive industry. And every time the industry thought it had a new way of making some profits, getting rid of the old Fleet Street printing presses, getting rid of the unions, they find another way to get rid of all the profits that they had so confidently predicted were about to descend on them through price wars or through spending on other things. It's been an industry that people go into for all kinds of reasons, sometimes vanity, sometimes passion, sometimes both. And sometimes they find a corner of it where they can make money, and there have been such corners. Bill Emmett, editor of The Economist, is in the corner representing one of those corners. And other examples within the British newspaper industry have bucked that trend. But it's amazing how many losses over the years it has sustained. So as I said, we just need to set aside the sense that there was a golden age. If there ever was, it was American newspapers before the internet. They had really had city monopolies and all the advertising that flowed to them from those cities, and they could do what they wanted. And some of the best journalism we've seen in the kind of Western tradition has come out of that. But that age really has gone. Let me talk a bit about prospect then. I was at the Times, I was writing, I had a job I adored, I was writing a daily column on foreign affairs. The world is not short of foreign affairs to comment on, and it was an exhilarating thing to do. But I wanted to take on prospect because it seemed to me there was an appetite for more depth than was in the newspapers on a lot of news. And also that Prospect was in a difficult point. That point had been started now 20 years ago by a man called David Goodhart, who was an old colleague of mine at the Financial Times. And he set out to say, look, Britain hasn't got something that's like an American long-form magazine, like the New Yorker or like the Atlantic or the New Republic. And Britain should have one of these. And it was an inspired thing to do. And all his colleagues at the Financial Times were terribly rude to him about it, including the editor, and said, look, you haven't got a chance. And he's a brilliant and passionate person who set out and said, no, well, I'm going to raise the money for it, and I'm going to do this. And so he started it out, and he had for 10 years a very good backer who helped him build the circulation as he did, but many, many loyal readers. And then that founding shareholder sadly got ill, and then it entered a more troubled phase. With different shareholders coming in with passion, but completely different visions, as always happens. And it began then to lose really impressive amounts of money, which I'm not going to say on your podcast, but we can discuss in questions. And this was not, it seems to me, entirely David Goodhart's fault. He'd brought in quite reasonably some sort of professional money men who were very well-meaning, but not professional publishers, who all had lots of rather expensive ideas about how to develop the magazine. And it successfully spent quite a lot more money, but the circulation didn't follow, and that coincided with recession. So it was in a bad way. And I took it on because I thought I could do some things quite quickly to improve its financial state. And it deserved that. And I thought that he had been absolutely right, that there still was a real demand for long-form journalism. And I must say, I think that is absolutely right, that nothing I have seen or learned in my time there makes me think that the demand for reading about things in depth is there. It's just how do you reach those readers and how do you make money out of that is the question. But the appetite is there. And what it is now is a magazine of 8 long features in the middle, a long arts, a book section really, of 4 long book reviews. We're not trying to compete with the daily newspapers, and short columns at the back and front. And I'll describe in a bit how I got there, because it had a much more complicated structure in the beginning. But we've done this because it's what the readers most want, it's most us, and it's what does best online as well. I took it over on 2 conditions. One was that they had enough money, they said, to meet the payroll for 3 months.
3 months?
Yep. And the other one was that I'd be chief executive as well as editor, because I could see that it was going to be no fun being editor for something that was losing as much money as this, because you'd be told what to do all the time by a chief executive, and that it was going to be, a lot of the business was going to be monetizing my lifetime contacts, if you like, and I didn't want to be told how to do that, although that was obviously signing on for an extra helping of trouble. It had made never any attempt to sell advertising, really. It had been faintly hostile even to the idea. And I remember walking into the office the first day and the flat plan said, your publication has 1 advert. we now have about 30. out of 88 pages, and it was clear that whatever else it did, never mind the editorial, it was negligent not to go out and raise and try and open the doors to. And you have all kinds of theories about the decline of print advertising, everything. It's irrelevant. There's still some out there, and we would be negligent not to try and get that. And so actually the first person I met on going in the building was the sales director, who was a very sorry-looking chap, feeling very miserable. And we set about actually creating some special supplements, which fitted a bit awkwardly with the editorial, but on specialist subjects that would allow him to go and talk to people. Because and I was surrounded by people saying, aren't you loving editing Prospect? And it was a daily battle to get the cash in. I found the promise of having 3 months payroll in the bank wasn't quite true either. What they meant was if they put more money in the bank, then they could meet payroll for 3 months, but they hadn't quite committed to do that. And we had, and it was backed by 4 or 5 passionate sort of financiers, very, very good, honourable people, made their money in finance and wanted to do something on it. On the other hand, they did not agree. The sight of them meeting in a damp Bloomsbury basement in good hedge fund jeans, these men together worth hundreds of millions of pounds and fighting over the identity of this loss-making magazine was one of the choicer comedies of my life. But still, we had to get the money, and I then reached into my sort of long history of media contacts and media finance contacts and went round raising money for it and pledges of money, and that's how I spent the first 6 months, and raised pledges of close to £1 million, and that shook out the board, and people decided whether or not they wanted to stay, and we now have a much simpler bank of shareholders, one main one. Who is very committed to it in its most serious form. The tussle for the identity had been a subtle one. It had been over, pretty much as it is now, which is quite politically focused, really focused quite heavily on the themes and the ideas behind political and economic debates, so the ideas behind the news, with quite a dose of how to resolve the problems of our time, how to resolve the problems of the West. Debt, deficits, problems of democracy, lot on demography, technology, globalization, all these kind of things. And there have been a tussle to make it just slightly lighter, a bit more like the New Yorker, more full of delight, as one said it. And these things are only 15 degrees off. It's really interesting how subtle battles over an identity of a title can be. On the other hand, if you don't resolve them, you're facing two ways at once. And those things are very muddying to the sense of purpose. And it did take time to shake out. We got him more advertising, which is worth about 300,000 a year from nothing. There'd been a very expensive campaign, really phenomenally expensive, old-fashioned marketing to raise the circulation, which had worked in terms of getting in more numbers, but it consisted of sending out bits of paper, to buying lists off other newspapers or magazines, sending out bits of paper, asking people to subscribe to the print form of the magazine. Incredibly expensive. And also with more and more offers, it had been sold more and more cheaply. And it was clear we were going to have to get the yield, the price that people were paying, up again, or we weren't going to have much of a revenue. And we began changing the marketing to do that. We have done a lot with the identity to just keep coming back to the question of what is Prospect, who are we, what is it that makes a Prospect article, what is it that makes a Prospect question. And again, I keep sitting with the editors who work with me. I have one for the opinions at the front, one for the features in the middle, one for the arts and books at the back, and a digital editor. I don't employ writers, and this was one of the decisions. We work with writers regularly. We work with some who write for us every month. Peter Kellner, the pollster, Anatole Kaletsky, the economist, are two of those. A.C. Grayling, the philosopher, writes a column for us every month and is on our board. But we don't have people on contract. It had been one of the ways that it started losing a lot of money, was writing contracts for people, or paying a lot for regular content that it then wasn't using. But we really, again, I'll come on to that. We have quite a decision to make about the website and whether we need to write contracts to get the kind of content we need for that. It didn't have much of a website. We started up a very good one, manned by two people, from 7 till 11, pretty much 7 days a week. And again, trying to get regular voices onto that, regular writers onto that. We've turned that website into the main form of our marketing, so that we we try and attract as wide a readership as we can to that website, and then try and get people into sign up to our newsletter, and then that gives us more opportunities to market the subscriptions to them. One of the biggest things we've done, and this made the biggest financial difference to us, is starting up events. And this has become really central to what we're doing. So we said, look, we're not just a magazine, and we're not just a website, however lively that is. We want a voice that comes from having events. And they're not just going to be like conferences to make money or something. We want to have events that come straight out of the editorial. But we're going to get them sponsored. And we get significant amounts of money for this sponsorship of events. Then there is the question of whether we do any editorial with that. And the policy is no within the magazine. We will write up those events and put them in a section on the website of sponsored content, labelled as that. And we do special supplements now, generally once a month, 16 pages, again, which can be sponsored and carry advertising and are more specialist. But each thing is labelled very, very clearly. So if there is an article by the sponsor, which there isn't always, we will put by article by the sponsor. And this has brought in really quite a lot of money, and I'll go into more details later in the questions. It's probably made the single biggest difference to our financial position. One finance house said to us very clearly, they said, look, we'll take out a print ad with you, but we've been doing that for years, not with you, but just with everyone, and we make these glossy ads that look beautiful. We're not sure it's really got us anywhere. No one's ever heard of us. We know we do sort of, we give, you know, finance for bits of, for councils to build really unglamorous bits of infrastructure. What we really want to do is be seen to be part of the debate. So we'd like you to hold round tables for us, very much like this table, discussions. We'd like you to get some local government people. We'd love it if you could write that up and put it on your website, and we'll give you far more money than we would give you for a print ad. And all this is true. There are problems with this, because it can knock you off course very quickly. You can find yourself doing things really specialist stuff. It doesn't have to, the problem, it doesn't have to be clearly offensive to the integrity of the magazine. It can just be distracting in its subject or its specialization, because it's someone else's agenda. So a great deal of my time, my editor's time, is now on discussing and marshalling that. And just again, coming back to this question, every day, what is Prospect? What are we about? What are the things that we want to be doing in terms of events? And then which of these suggestions from potential sponsors do we want to take? And how can we make them more us? So if there's one, say, on fish stocks, which is actually a big topic, and is not something, you know, if you're picking up Prospect, if you're a subscriber, you'd expect maybe one or two articles in a year on fish problems, except one of those might be on elephants or some other type of conservation. You wouldn't expect a great specialist supplement on fish. So if we're going to do it, how are we going to do it in a way that doesn't skew it and doesn't staple us to someone else's campaign? And we tend to do it through debates, so we get both sides. And I can talk more about this in questions, but this, I've talked to many other editors about it. This is becoming very, very common. Companies saying, look, this is the new advertising. We'll give you sponsorship, or we'd like to have our own articles in there. How are you going to treat that? So there's a lot of discussion every day goes on how we deal with this really quite small amount of material proportionately in a way that doesn't change our identity. and if anything, strengthens the identity. The next steps we're taking, we need to improve our paywall, which is confusing to the readers. We've gone down this subscription and paywall route, but we're moving to a metered paywall. That is like the Financial Times, so you can get a certain number free, then you must give your email, then a certain number more, and then you must subscribe. And that is much more efficient for us. It is amazing that even though this has become the kind of industry, almost the industry standard, that everyone has the same problems in developing these paywalls with their software designers, and it really becomes a very tortuous battle to get this clean. But that's one of our next steps. And for us, the difference this has made is really just taking print advertising alone cut a quarter off the losses. We've made some improvement. Circulation has gone up by a few percent, but the yield on the circulation has gone up more. We've taken a lot of steps to repair the driving down of the price that was going on with a lot of the special offers, and we wanted that before we really tried to get the top line numbers moving ahead. That's made about another quarter of the difference. The events has made really another like a quarter, and so we're down to about three. We've cut three quarters off the losses, and if we cut back on marketing, we would be in a pretty healthy position, but we've chosen, and our owners have chosen, not to do that at this point. So we're in a much better position. It still, though, comes back to the editing questions I raised at the beginning, because you can do all this stuff, some of which is like firefighting, and some of which is strategic, like the marketing. But it really just does keep coming back to the question of identity, and we're getting even better at that, I think, and clearer as an organisation after these difficult years of scrambling to repair the financial position. Now, just saying, you know, what is it that Prospect can bring to things? And I think we're now in a strong position with a big presence at Westminster. We're about to move, courtesy of one of our owners, to a building right in Westminster, which will allow us to have a lot of debates with MPs right there, and increase the number of debates we're holding to probably three a week. We're holding one or two a week at the moment, or events of some kind. And it just is increase our voice and our presence. We took a stand at one of the book festivals at Hay on Wye, which is a big book festival out in the Welsh countryside, and sold in a couple of days 320 subscriptions, which for us is a big deal. And we've got a lot of the people from the staff doing it. They're selling face to face, selling it was a good offer, but not a cheap offer. And the feedback that we got on that was really very, very positive. And it's something that we just wouldn't have been able to do a few years ago. In a way, that seems like, you know, a small number, but actually a small number made that quickly, repeated many times, is going to close the remaining gap for us. So I think we're feeling in a very confident position. But we've done it through really a lot of different tactics. And when you stand back, you can't always see the working under the surface. I would just say that we've done it by subscription. I would just say briefly, obviously, there are other models. The Atlantic, the New Statesman, for example, and as The Guardian is doing in its website, have gone for free access, going for big, big numbers, putting a lot of content up. And that is a different way of doing it. And The Atlantic certainly claims to have taken the magazine into profit very quickly at that point, turning around one of those big old American struggling magazines into a very jazzy website and into a very healthy financial position. The New Statesman, I think, wouldn't quite claim that, but has got a lot of digital advertising from the big numbers it's got on its website. but it is doing that through a team of journalists in India, right, just rewriting the news simply to get the volume up. You can do that, and the digital advertising is clearly out there. That isn't the route we've gone, and so we've got smaller numbers of about 300,000 unique visitors per month on our website, but still enough to get some digital advertising. There are many models, as I said, and I'd be interested in questions. We can talk about other things. We've got Anatole Kaletsky, the economist I referred to, is trying in his own business to explore a micropayment system where people pay just for individual articles, and to get a lot of titles signed up to that. Streaming services are now starting up almost by the month, a bit like Spotify, where you sign on for £10 a month and get lots and lots and lots of magazines. We've chosen not to be part of them, but it's clearly the way part of the industry is going. So there are lots of models out there. I've been talking simply about one, and at a very small scale on that, compared to some of you. But as I said, I took on Prospect because of the feeling that you wouldn't have to do that many things to at least rescue it, and that has been true. And now we're up against the harder strategic questions about both identity and digital marketing, which are really difficult questions for the industry. I'm going to stop there. Because I'm conscious that this is, in a way, this is simply one take on a very complicated subject, and you will all have different perspectives on it.
Thank you.